Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoog, your host. Glad to have you with us today on this Monday, not quite as warm as it has been on Mondays past. Nice out there, but still warm as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City, and proud we are to be here on this lovely day. Well, we're going to talk to, I may wrap up my summer musicals with my second interview today. There's been a lot of them going on this summer. This may be the last scheduled one for the summer months, but then again, there'll be a fall musical come along real soon, and we'll be involved in that as well. In the first half of the show, we're going to talk to the group In Play. They are coming back. They left us for a while, but they are back, you know, not just on the show, but in the Kansas City theater scene as well. And we'll be talking with them here in our first half hour. And then the second half hour, pretty sure I'm wrapping up the summer musical season with Gladstone Theater in the Park. They're doing Seussical, and a lot of interesting tie-ins there. They just discovered a new script for a Dr. Seuss book, and Seussical, it will be hot right now, I'm sure, outside as well as inside as well. But let's go first to In Play. That was a group that was involved for many years doing shows around the area. The president, president? Jackie Gafford is the president of the Board of Trustees of In Play. She's also the artistic director. She's a producer, and she may not want to admit it, but I've seen her act in the past as well. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show, Jackie.
Thank you, Michael.
Dennis Jackson is here. He has been involved with In Play Theater, the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, the Kansas City Repertory Theater. He plays Cassio in the show, and we won't kid him too much, but his brother Barry Jackson has a show right here on KKFI. So he knows all of the inside dirt on all of us, I'm sure.
The Funk Meister.
That's right. The Funk Meister is probably listening right now. So the fact that he has never played any of your music...
An instigator, Michael.
That's right. Hey, we like to have fun on the show.
Indeed.
As well. Lynn King is with us as well. She has appeared. Well, she's currently teaching at Pembroke Country Day School.
Pembroke Hill.
Oh, okay.
That's all right.
That used to be the title, though.
That's right.
When we played them in basketball, it was a real long title like that.
Yes, that's right. It used to be the title.
That's right. I assume you're probably teaching dramatics?
I'm teaching theater classes to middle and high school students.
Yeah, do those hoity-toity kids, do they? You don't have to comment on that. Do they catch on to the drama?
They do. I have some pretty talented students over there, actually.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. But you're a professional actress in your own right. I've seen you at many places around town. The Unicorn, Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. What else did I write down? What all did I write down for Lynn here? I wrote a bunch of things.
Yeah, the repertory. I've been at Casey Rep. Worked at the New Theater also. The Unicorn is where I spent a lot of time. And, of course, I've been with In Play since they began.
Yeah.
I was on the original board with them and at the table when they came up with this idea.
Oh, sure. Yeah, which brings us back to Jackie. She was one of the originals with In Play. Was it an offshoot of New Directions? Am I remembering correctly?
Actually, no, not really. New Directions had been gone for quite some time. This was actually just a totally new thing because we had so many actors who wanted to work and were not finding a venue and were not finding material that they were really interested in, and that's pretty much how In Play got started. We were doing material that actors of color were interested in doing, because a lot of times what they were called on to do was not something that they were real happy to do. They just were happy to be working.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been able to pull some very talented actors because of the type of material that we choose to do.
Yeah. So, but a few years ago, you kind of disappeared from the. Did you get burned out?
Well, no. Actually, we decided to do some political work. So we were working on several campaigns, and then there were some health problems that came into play, and then there were some family obligations to top all that off. And being the type of company we are, we were able to just put it in mothballs, go on hiatus, but we always were going to come back with it. It just was a matter of deciding when, where, and what type of material we were going to do.
Yeah, so you're doing a series of staged readings. There's going to be two different staged readings coming up. The one we're mostly going to talk about today is Othello. Mm-hmm. That will be happening at the Just Off Broadway Theater in the Pin Valley Room at the Just Off Broadway Theater, which is located, it has an official address now, 3051 Central. For a long time, it was just the south end of Pin Valley Park, 3051 Central, and at the south end of Pin Valley Park. As I said, the number to call, by the way, for more information is 816-784-5020, and that's where the shows are going to be, a staged reeling of Othello. Why did you pick Othello? I bet you there's a comparative reason why this fits together.
Well, it's not something that's done very often, and Frances Farah, who is the director of this particular production, she really loves Shakespeare, and she wanted to do this production because there is a casting twist in this production that we're not sure has ever been tried before.
Oh.
And we looked at it from a lot of different angles and thought this would really be interesting to cast this particular character differently from the traditional way.
And we're not giving that away. You would rather not.
I think we'll just let the audience be surprised.
Okay. Lynn probably would be good at this. She's the instructor. So she could school us on the storyline of Othello. If some of the audience is not familiar with Othello, it's one of Shakespeare's well-done works.
More accessible works,
yes.
Actually.
Yes. A timeless story, I would say. Othello is about a Moor, a black official and military man, who falls in love with a young girl who is this Desdemona. There's Othello and Desdemona. And there, he actually appoints Dennis's character, Cassio, to be his lieutenant or his second in line. There is a friend of his, Iago, who he's worked with for a long time, who was expecting to get that position and does not. Hence his passion and his attachment or her attachment to Othello, and their friendship, their long-term friendship. Iago is hurt. That is the lieutenant he's passed over. And wants revenge. So he uses a number of ways and a number of people to set up a process, if you will, of revenge against Othello.
Yeah, Shakespeare's plays are filled with revenge, backstabbing, cases of mistaken identity, all over the place. Kind of very contemporary as well. How does Cassio, Dennis, fit into the show?
Well, Cassio's a close friend of Desdemona's, and Desdemona is wife to Othello. And Iago is very jealous of Cassio, as Lynn said, because Iago wanted to be lieutenant versus being something less than. So he becomes, because of his friendship with Desdemona, and as a focus of the revenge, he becomes a bit of a tool for Iago in terms of being able to exercise that revenge.
Yeah. Now, how does Lynn's character fit into that? Is there a connection there?
Well, we don't really have to discuss
that
right now.
Oh, this must be that.
But let's just say Lynn does play a pivotal role.
Okay. Shakespeare is a hard thing to come back with. You and Fran decided to
If you're going to do a full-blown production,
that's
yes.
Right.
But that was why we chose to do a staged reading, in that you have a short rehearsal period and you have minimal movement because people are reading. And we're really going at this as more of storytelling, to tell the story of what happened to Othello the Moor and to actually to kind of draw a parallel, because this story is universal in politics, and the politics that come to play in this story are extremely, very heavy politics. And it's something that you can relate to in what's going on in our particular government right now.
Yeah, they... Well, I that would give it away if I said what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Things going on all over the place.
Yes, but, if you're even familiar with just watching the news, you can relate to this story in that people expect things, and when they don't get them, they decide that they're going to fix, quote unquote, that person and make sure that they see them their downfall because of their, you know, their own disappointment, and that's paramount in this story, in that Iago has sets up a machine, as it were, sets up a machine that's like dominoes falling down to get to who he wants. And Iago does not care who is destroyed, so that this particular character, so that Iago, Othello, will also be destroyed. So Iago basically wipes out everybody mm-hmm. to get to Othello.
Yeah, did Shakespeare originate that term, scorched earth? I don't know if it came
that's
from...
pretty much what happened.
I don't know if it
here.
Came from Shakespeare or from somewhere else, but that well-known term, scorched
right,
earth.
Right, you end up with a pretty high body count
yeah.
at the end of this play.
Yeah, it's probably only second to Richard III.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a pretty heavy podcast as well. We're speaking with the president of the board.
I'd rather just be artistic director.
Artistic director. Jackie Gafford is with us, as well as Lynn King and Dennis Jackson. They're appearing in the staged reading in play presentation of Othello, which is going to be happening really soon now.
Open on Thursday.
This is the third, so mm-hmm. the sixth would be Thursday. Mm-hmm. Performances on August the 6th, Thursday at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 7th at 7:30 p.m., Saturday the 8th at 7:30 p.m., then an afternoon matinee on Sunday the 9th at 2 o'clock. No,
we do it a little differently.
Oh, okay.
At JLB, we do our matinee performances on Saturday.
Oh.
So we have a 2 o'clock Saturday performance, a 7 o'clock performance on Saturday also, and then just the 2 o'clock performance on Sunday. So we do two performances on Saturday and one performance on Sunday.
So two performances then on mm-hmm. Saturday, but not two for the price of one.
No,
and we're not
supposed, we can't do that.
We're not supposed to talk about prices anyway, but that will be happening mm-hmm. Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, and Sunday afternoon at the Just Off Broadway Theater in the Pin Valley Room. That's the room that's just on the south side of the
Just Off. If you have not been to Just Off Broadway in a while, you need to come over. The theater has been renovated a couple of years ago, so they have quite a few new amenities, and one of those being the Pin Valley Room, which has multi-purposes. It's used for performances, for rehearsals, for receptions. It's in a great spot in that you can actually have performances in both spaces at the same time, or performances and rehearsals going on, and it's really expanded the use of the theater.
Yeah, and that's in the building. So if you just mm-hmm. go to the regular Just Off Broadway Theater, which, should I tackle this? Should I ask one of you? Sometimes it's hard to get to.
Yes.
You have to go south of 31st and come under the street. And I always forget what the name of the street that goes under is.
Well, it's the only building down there. So okay. once you come under the overpass, if you yeah. miss the building, you probably should go see an eye doctor. But the problem with it is that there's the actual address and the street address are different, and people would use their GPS, and the GPS would send them over to Lydia's behind Union Station someplace.
Oh.
So if you're going to use your GPS, it has to be 3051 Central, and that is where your GPS will then send you to the right place. The I think the street address that they've been given, that has been given to the space, is 3150 Pin Valley.
Oh, okay.
And that's not right.
No.
Put it that way. If you put that into your GPS, you're going to end up over at the Lydia you know,
Luigi's. And that's a fine restaurant, but that's not where you want to go.
If you're hungry, that's probably the place you want to be. But if you want to see a show, it's not going to do you a lot of good.
So 3051 Central, and the zip code I have for that, because if you do MapQuest things, 64108. Would be where you want to go.
It's on the
very south end of mm-hmm. Penn Valley Park.
It's just a little difficult to get to because everything crisscrosses there. And people have often said, I can see it, but I can't get to it. And I will not tell you how many times I've stood outside of the theater and talked people in.
Well, what I have done, and you don't necessarily always want to do what I do. I'm strange. I go south on Broadway. I make a left as soon as I can, go around to Central, come back north on Central, go under 31st Street, and then you're just a right turn away from the parking lot.
Yeah, and another really good way is to go west on Linwood to Wyandotte and just take a right on Wyandotte, and it'll take you straight to the theater. You go under the overpass. You're actually going under 31st Street. You go under there, and you look to your right, and there's the building.
Sure. Now, that sounds like I'm making fun. I am having fun with it.
It is a little difficult, but I tell you this. People come there one time, and they say, oh, this is so easy. And once you've been there, once you've made it there one time, you'll never forget how to get there. And I've heard people say that so many times. I've gone past this building, I don't know how many times, and wondered what it was. And even today we have people who just walk in and say, what is this? And the building actually has a very interesting history.
I was going to bring that up.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, the building initially was a sort of barn for the city.
The horses.
Yeah, they kept horses and they kept supplies there. And later on, when horses went out of fashion, then they just kept salt there to salt the roads. And then I think in the 70s it just kind of fell out of use. And then in 1990, some homeless people were in there trying to stay warm, and they built a fire, burnt the thing to the ground. And we had a the guy who was over Parks and Recreation at the time, he was a theater buff. And he decided to, once they got the insurance money, to build a black box theater there. And that's how Just Off Broadway came to be.
Yeah, and it's been a godsend for many of the theater groups around here.
Oh, definitely.
People finding spaces, finding homes has always been a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a problem in every... They tell me the same thing up in Omaha. You know,
but the great part about JLB is that it is... We've really worked to make it a real theater. So there's lights, there's sound. We have a box office. We have concessions. The seating is already there. The seating is somewhat flexible in that if you need to move it around, you can. But it's not like just trying to go into some, you know, open space somewhere and make it into a theater. It is an actual theater. We have dressing rooms now mm-hmm. that have bathrooms with showers. We have a space now, a shop where you can store things, in addition to the Penn Valley room. So it's actually developing into a real theater complex.
And one time, weren't you on the board of JOP as
oh,
well?
Oh, yeah. I was on the board for like 14 years.
Lynn was as well, no?
No. No, I worked there quite a bit. Worked in the space a lot.
She had better sense.
I was not actually on the board and worked in it when it was newly opened. So
yeah,
I believe that In Play did the second show in that space that was ever done. We did Harlem Nights, a script that I wrote. In Play being the poverty-stricken company that we are, I wrote a lot of the plays that we did simply because we could not afford the royalties, and
sure.
actually had some pretty good luck with them.
Sure.
Surprised me.
She's being very modest.
Oh, yeah. Well, royalties can be a problem, you know, especially for a fledgling, that's my word. That's my word for the week. Fledgling theater group, of course, and but you've been around a long time. You've stood the test of time. When did you start In Play? Do you remember?
Oh, 1999.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. been a while.
Right. Now, mm-hmm. the first production was in 1999 on the TYA stage when they were still over Mission Mall. So you know that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. That was a long time ago. Lynn's been in a lot of In Play productions.
Yes, I was in the first production. I think I've been in almost every In Play production except for maybe one or two of them.
Yeah. And you've had some people go on from there to do bigger things.
We've had quite a few of our actors go on actually to perform on the rep stage. and some who've left town and gone on to do it. Angela Polk actually was someone who worked with us for
very
a while.
Early in her career.
As I understand, mm-hmm. she's in L.A. or New York at this time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've had some people who just who stayed and worked and went through and went on to other things, which is great. That's one of the reasons the company was started.
Now, I've seen Lynn at a lot of places. Unicorn, New Theater as well.
Yes, I worked at the New Theater one summer. Great experience. I've been there once. I think I've been in almost every venue in town except for the theater at Crown Center, which is no longer
American Heart.
American Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of my professors actually began that theater.
We had an actress, I won't mention the name, I could. But, an actress who opened and closed the American Heartland Theater.
Wow. Right?
But it had its time.
That'll be me in in-play.
Well, you know, Kansas City has a very small theater community. Everybody basically knows everybody.
That's
else.
True. Yeah. Everyone knows everyone. Now, you have a second production, we should mention, that's coming up in November as well, Missing You Metropolis.
Yes, Missing You Metropolis was written by Gary Jackson. He's out of...
related Topeka. To Dennis and
no,
Barry?
No, no,
no.
No
relation.
No relation. Let's make that clear right now. But this play is... The book actually won several awards, and one of our board members, Penny Weiner, happened upon this book, and she became so intrigued with it that she got in touch with Gary and got permission to write an adaptation, a stage adaptation of it. She, some other, I'm not sure if there are faculty members or what over at Washburn, but Thomas Fox Averill, Eric McHenry, and Israel Wasserstein, they helped with this adaptation. They did it multimedia. And the book is intriguing because it's about a young black boy in Topeka who is totally enamored of comic books and comic book heroes. And in reading all of these books, he realizes there are no black comic book heroes.
Well, that's true.
And right, and the book is a commentary about this fact and wishful thinking about what if. And it also revolves around the fact that a very dear friend of his committed suicide, and the sadness about that, and how he used that interest in comic books to help him get through that terrible experience. But that one is one that we're going to be doing in November.
That ought to be interesting. Yeah, November 18th. 19, 20, 21, and 22, also at the Just Off Broadway Theater.
Right, and that will also be by the book, and it will be in the Penn Valley Room.
Are we going to expand to full-blown theater productions?
Oh, yes, we definitely have. I have a comedy that I'm going to be doing next year, because at JLB you have to schedule a year and a half out. So I have a comedy called Grapevine that I'm going to be doing next year, and then we're going to be doing a couple of shows in conjunction with a Melting Pot. That's Harvey Williams and his wife. Because we've all worked together so many times, Harvey and I have collaborated several times on different shows. I've directed for him, he's acted for me, and Just Off Broadway has become a real catalyst for that type of work.
Sure.
So In Play and Melting Pot are going to collaborate on a production next year.
Yeah, now he's coming here next week to talk about one of his plays. Are you involved in that?
I believe that's Gospel.
The school or Old Days.
It's Old Days.
Old School Ghetto Gospel.
Yes, Lynn did the first production.
I've been the first production.
Old School Ghetto Gospel.
Involved
in this one as well?
No, not
she's in our show this time.
Okay.
Old School Ghetto Gospel is a show that I directed last year, and Lynn was actually in it.
Yes.
And this year he's done some rewrites on it. He's going to be doing it again, and they're in rehearsal the same time we're in rehearsal. That's what I was saying with the beauty of the new facility is they're in rehearsal on the main stage. We're in rehearsal in Penn Valley, in the Penn Valley Room, and that was something that was totally impossible before they did the renovation. So even if you were coming into the theater, you had to find a rehearsal space.
Oh, sure. Well, he'll be here next week to talk about that, and we'll ask him what he knows cares about Jackie?
don't ask him. He won't tell the truth. I can tell you that right now.
Dennis has been a lot of the in-play, but also the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, the Rep. What shows did you do there?
At the Rep, we did Two Trains Running.
Oh, okay.
And there was one other show.
No, it was...
No.
Joe Turner Come and Gone, something like that?
Two Trains.
A Raisin in the Sun.
A Raisin in the Sun.
And didn't you do another August Wilson?
There was another one. I can't remember the name of it.
You know, I remember meeting him before he passed away. Yeah. He came to one of the performances at the Rep, and they sat some of us down with him at a table, and he talked about some of his work and went into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But... In place, by the book, that's what they call the stage readings. They're doing Othello. That opens this Thursday, August 6th, 7:30 p.m. Performances continue then on Friday the 7th. Two chances to see it on Saturday, 2 o'clock p.m. in the afternoon and 7:30 p.m. in the evening. Then an afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. on Sunday the 9th at the Just Off Broadway Theater, located at 3051 Central. It's at the south end of Tin Valley Park. The number you can call for more information is 816-784-5020, or you can go to the Just Off Broadway website to learn more information about what's going on with In Play. They're coming back after a short hiatus for personal and political and other reasons. But it was never your intent to go away forever.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We always knew we were going to come back. It just was a matter of deciding when and what we were going to do when we got back.
And what material. And if you're going to start, you might as well start with some of the most timeless material there is.
I noticed, too, that here in town, that has become a bit of a trend to do book in hand. And the reason being mainly financial is that when you do book in hand, you have a shorter rehearsal period. You don't have to build all these huge sets. You don't have to have all the production values, and you can tell the story, and it centers on the actor and the story, which is mainly what we want to do anyway.
Well, that wasn't done for a long time, and then a lady named Patricia Baker came along. I know you know Patricia. Mm-hmm. I did, too. And we did things with her group. And since her passing, it has exploded. Lots of other organizations are doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. But the next production production of this nature, by the book, In Place, calling it. They're doing Othello, and it opens, of course, this Thursday, August 6th, for 5 performances at the Pin Valley Room of the Just Off Broadway Theater, 3051 Central, at the very south end of Pin Valley Park. If you need to MapQuest things, you need the address, of course, 3051 Central, and the zip code 64108, and the number to call, 816-784-5020, or the Just Off Broadway website will help as well. I want to thank my guests for telling us about their return. Jackie Gafford, she wants to be the artistic director. So among all the hats, artistic director of In Play, Dennis Jackson, he'd be in the show as well in the role of Cassio, and Lynn King in the show as well, all in Othello, which is opening up this Thursday.
That's right.
At the Just Off Broadway Theater. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to take a short break, but then when we return, we're going to talk about perhaps the last outdoor musical theater show of the summer. We've talked to so many of them here on the show. The Gladstone Theater in the Park, and they're going to talk about their musical, Seussical, when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Tom Cruise goes back to the well for a fifth time with yet another Mission Impossible movie. Making it worth seeing should be, well, impossible. But the IMF force has done it again. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is an entertaining action adventure that delivers all of the over-the-top espionage exploits that we've come to expect. The plot is inconsequential. There are good guys trying to keep the world order and bad guys trying to end it. Just go with the flow, and you'll probably find that Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is impossible to dislike. I wish I could say the same thing about the reboot of the Vacation franchise. It's been 32 years since Chevy Chase took the Griswold family on their first ill-fated road trip to Wally World. Now Chevy's adult son, played by Ed Helms, decides to recreate the experience with his family. But the filmmakers have upped the ante for an audience that's used to R-rated gross-out humor. The nerdy sweetness of the original films has given way to a cynically raunchy approach. There are a few genuine laughs to be had, but you have to wade through a lot of doo-doo humor to get to them. Mark Ruffalo's sharp performance is the main attraction of Infinitely Polar Bear, the story of a manic depressive who tries his best to win back his wife and raise his two daughters after a mental breakdown. The story is autobiographical for writer-director Maya Forbes, the writer-producer of The Larry Sanders Show. While low-key and episodic, Infinitely Polar Bear is a sweet-natured and warm comic drama. The Stanford Prison Experiment is an intriguing drama based on a true story. Billy Crudup plays a psychologist who recruits students to give up their freedom for 2 weeks and either be prisoners or guards. The transformation that occurs among them is fascinating. Also opening this week, a Lego Brickumentary is a documentary about the famous building blocks and the people obsessed with them. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
This week, we're talking to uber atheist Sam Harris. These days, he's embracing spirituality, but he still thinks religion is the root of all evil.
People who are absolutely sure of paradise and absolutely sure that there's one way to get there are not, you know, part of your audience, and those are the people I'm really worried about.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
And don't forget all the other arts programming here on KKFI. For instance, on Wednesday, in this same time block, 12 o'clock noon, Art Speak Radio, with Maria Vasquez Boyd. I didn't get the name of her guest for this week, but I'm sure they'll be marvelous. So, Arts Magazine, 12 o'clock noon on Monday. Art Speak Radio, 12 o'clock noon on Wednesday, right here on KKFR, where we get your arts on every week. More than you want, probably. All right here on the station. So welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Possibly the last outdoor summer musical of the season. Well, we've been to Johnson County, we've been to Leawood, Raytown, Blue Springs, Leavenworth, all over the place. Finally, we get to Gladstone. And here to tell us about the Gladstone production, which is actually the second. They have two, so it's harder to cover them. But actually the second summer theater production of the year for Gladstone is called Seussical. The musical, and with us to tell us all about it, Vanessa Campagna. I must get this right because she went to Mizzou, as did I.
You've got it, Campagna.
Campagna. Well, welcome. She has a PhD from the University of Missouri Columbia. Other credits include directing, choreography, performing, costuming, dramaturg. Now that's a research job that a lot of people don't know exists. The dramaturg job.
That is true.
Has been involved with the Unicorn, the Cedar Fair Company, the Independent Actors Theater, and the MU Summer Rep program as well. And she is directing Seussical at Gladstone Theater in the Park, the second of two musicals that you have. The first one was a few weeks ago.
Mary Poppins.
Now that's, I would think that, well, I don't know. Yours might be more involved with the costumes even than that. But that had some challenges to it, I'm sure, for whomever directed that.
Certainly. That was directed by Danielle Trebus. And the flying, of course, is certainly the large element to Mary Poppins. You've got to get people in the air. There's magic. I would say that our show also has magic.
Oh, sure.
Certainly more presentational, however. So the magic doesn't have to be magic-y. We can see it happening in front of us, and that's kind of the fun of it. You can use your imagination.
Yeah. Well, the park is over by Oak Park High School.
That's correct.
It's what, Oak Grove Park?
Oak Grove Park. It's the Gladstone Amphitheater right there on the park property at 76th and North Truce, north of the river.
Yeah, well, I have some things I want to ask about that. The blanket run, as they call it. But let's talk about some of the other stuff. Zach Faust is with us as well. He is the just a recent graduate of Winnetonka High School.
Yes, Vanessa's alumni.
Really?
So.
Long time before Zach.
And I was a long time before you.
So. Look at us, we're all alumni.
You have been at Gladstone Theater in the Park for 8 years, so you were quite young when you did your first show there.
Yes.
You were
Louis Leonwins in The King and I.
And The King and I has been performing since you were 6 years old. Recently directed his own production of the 25th Annual Putnam Spelling Bee at Okta and reprised his award-winning role of William Barfy.
Barfay.
Pronunciations aren't always my strong suit. Other roles include Terry Connor in Sideshow, Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof, that one I know, and the Cat in the Hat in Seussical, which is the role you are doing in this show.
Yes.
Val Phillips is with us as well. She will be making her debut with Gladstone Theater in the Park as Mrs. Mayor. Val received her BFA in musical theater performance from Tarkio College. She's performed all over Kansas City, Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park. I spoke with those people. Late Night Theater. Oh, really? Late Night Theater.
I went to school, actually, with Ron McGee and Missy Coons. I taught them everything they know.
Really? They never mentioned...
Well, maybe not everything.
When they were on, they never mentioned you. Right.
Oh, I'll have to get them.
Yes, you will have to get them as well. But Late Night Theater, in its day, very... entertaining.
I thought so.
They Late Night Theater lives again down at Missy B's, and
sure
one day we'll do an interview about that as well. But the Barn Players, Chestnut Fine Arts Theater, that's in Olathe, Okta. The Bell Road Barn Players, as I understand it, they haven't done a show for a while.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think last summer was their last performance.
And the Corbin Theater in the quaint little space in Liberty, Missouri.
Yes, quaint.
It's a small little space, but they've done some pretty good shows there.
Sure do.
As well. Mm-hmm. Now, Val and her husband Tim founded the KC Mystery Players in 2014. That's one of those interactive comedy murder mysteries that are going on. Mm-hmm. And we won't talk about your daughters and all that.
Well, one of them is in the show with me, so she plays a bird girl in Seussical. I'm very proud of her.
That's right. Now, Seussical, yes, the Dr. Seuss books. And the dialogue, Vanessa, must be very... You have to get the actors into the rhythm of the thing.
Well, it's interesting because you certainly could emphasize the rhythm of the text. That sort of poses a problem similar to Shakespeare in that you get into this singy-songy pattern and it really begins to wear on the ear. So it's a little bit of a balance between finding the rhythm of Dr. Seuss's text, but also being able to play with words and make phrases beautiful and change your tempo, change your pitches, so that it's a 90-minute show, which is a short show, but if we have the exact same rhythm for 90 minutes, it gets really old. So Zach and Val and many of the other actors who do speak, it's mostly singing in the show, but who do have some speaking lines, they've heard me tell them many times, break up the phrase, do something interesting with the phrase, shape it.
So it was your challenge to make this not quite. What am I going for here?
I think I just wanted an artistic liberty to kind of allow the text to have a life of its own, as opposed to just being like trite, childlike poetry. Because his writing really isn't. It's quite intellectual and deep.
Yeah.
So we kind of wanted to find a magnitude within the text and shape phrases.
Yeah, he was one of the writers where what he was saying wasn't always apparent. Beneath the clever rhythm and the rhymes and things like that were actually things being said, even of a political nature.
Absolutely. Sometimes. That's one of my favorite things about the piece is that, you know, we get about crowds of 500 to 600 every single night. And that's the original, a wide demographic in just three performances. And I think it's great to be able to offer something for everyone. So some people can come and it's just Dr. Seuss to them. And then some people are like, oh, yeah, the brink of war and the politics and the environment. And you have to listen to other people's opinion in life and get outside of the box and be a thinker. So it's really what you choose to see in the text and what you choose to allow yourself to take away from the show.
Yeah, it's mostly music, music and songs. Tell us about some of the songs in the show.
Well, the major song is Oh, the Things You Can Think. We come at it right in the top of the show. We reprise it as the finale. And for me, that's the heart of Dr. Seuss is having an imagination, and it's one of the elements of the show that really draw me to it as a director, because we live in this very digital age where everything's at our fingertips, and we just get stuck. So to actually have to use our imagination and try to be innovative is really a liberating concept. So that's one of my favorite songs. Then it's really intelligently written music, because there are recurring motifs. So in the How Lucky You Are, which is a very satirical song, and then throughout the show, other characters find themselves in very unlucky situations and then return to this How Lucky You Are motif musically to kind of comment on their own unpleasant situation, if you will.
Now, Zach is the Cat in the Hat. Intellectually speaking, how do you get inside the character of the cat? Everybody remembers the cat, what the cat did.
Well, the cat is just like me. We're
just like you.
Yes, we're okay. Very similar, and we're very large, outgoing, modest people.
Modest. The Cat in the Hat. Okay.
Yeah. We're very big. The cat, throughout the entire show, pops in and out of everything.
Yes.
Like, I mean, there's not really one scene that he's planted in, because he's the narrator of the entire show. And so I think just his sporadic behavior and, you know, him popping in at possibly the wrong moment, but giving the right information, I'd sometimes feel that way. Where I'm saying the wrong thing, but I'm saying the right thing, which is exactly how I picture the cat.
Uh-huh.
And so he definitely is somebody that's kind of a close-to-home sort of character, so it's a little bit easier to step into the outrageous sort of nature that he is.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Val plays Mrs. Mayor Seussical?
Yes.
Remembering that critic? Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Mayor in Seussical.
Yes. So she is married to the most important who of all, and that's Mr. Mayor. So she totally adores him and is very proud of her son and has her own take on things, of light, energetic sort of a character.
Does she find, in this play, does she find herself as the foil of the Cat in the Hat?
Funny you mention that, because I try to poke him as much as possible in choreography that isn't choreographed.
Thank you.
Really?
You're welcome.
Have that whole rivalry going on, because that's sort of the way the books were. Now, I'm aging myself, of course, but I go way back, and those books were popular when I was in grade school. They would let us check out these books, and there was a waiting list for every single one of the Dr. Seuss books going on. And so it has always been a popular theme. I don't think sometimes the parents realize all that was there, but still, you know, very popular.
And I'm a big believer that when you're doing children's theater or family-centric theater, you have to remember that at least half of your audience is parents and teachers, right? So you have to, as a director, find those moments where you're throwing the bone to those adults. So, you know, if anybody out there who's thinking, oh, well, I don't have children, Seussical may not be the right thing for me to come to. No, please do come, because we're finding those moments that allow the adults to get a laugh.
Now, Zach, do you see the cat as the anarchist? Within the story, anarchist, perhaps?
He is definitely the
Am I taking him in directions the director doesn't want him to go?
I'm very curious about his answer.
Okay. He's definitely the devil's advocate of the entire show.
Well, that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, I wouldn't technically say he's the anarchist, but he does...
Oh, he's always trying to stir it up.
Exactly. He does lead the characters in very bad situations, but he does it, you know, to teach them a lesson.
If people remember the books, he was always getting those kids to do stuff they shouldn't have been doing.
Exactly, but in the end...
Well, when your mother and father get home, too late.
Tears the entire house apart.
That's right.
But in the end, it teaches them to, you know, connect as two and, you know, listen to your parents. So definitely that's what the cat does throughout the show, especially for Jojo, who is another of the lead characters, and he kind of leads Jojo in these very bad situations that he causes, but it's all to teach Jojo, you know, an important lesson about, you know, people and, you know, being and, you know, sticking up, and also for Horton to, you know, let everybody know a person's a person, no matter how small, which is very big, which is the central theme of the show.
Yeah. Is there an actual storyline to it? Is it mostly...
It's a very complex piece of work.
Okay.
So we have a one linear narrative, and I wouldn't say that I think there's a single way to interpret the show, but the way I've approached it from a directorial perspective is that Horton, the elephant, is the protagonist. He finds this clover on which lives this population of tiny people called Whos. So a nice big interruption to his stasis, not to mention in this Whoville world there are all sorts of crises. So Horton must save them. He is our protagonist. This whole linear narrative, however, is nested quite metadramatically within the imagination of this young boy. So we've got three levels to the story. We've got JoJo and his imagination. Then we've got Horton in the jungle of Newell. Horton finds the clover on which is Whoville. So we've got three different realities. So working with actors to keep three realities separate, yet integrated when they need to be, has been a huge challenge. We have some chorus members that I really need to give a shout out to who are doing double duty, being Jungle of Newell and then transitioning into being Whoville citizens and changing their costumes quickly and having different mannerisms. So it takes a huge community. So while I would say that the show itself is an extraordinary product, I'm so proud of everyone's work, I would say it doesn't look like community theater.
Uh-huh.
It's community theater in the sense that there are 74 bodies on that stage coming together to create these three different realities, and they're just doing wonderful work.
Sure. Well, having heard you say that, did you want them to perhaps not be as familiar with the books? It would have been easier for you, I suppose, if they weren't.
You know, I don't think that my mind has even gone there at all, because I think one of the amazing things about taking literature and then performing it, and I was teaching a class when I was at Mizzou about the performance of literature and what needs to stay and what needs to go away. And I think as long as the audiences come knowing that they're seeing a play and not going to a library for a book reading, which seems pretty intuitive to me, then they will be able to have those joyous moments where they're seeing, oh, it's Horton the elephant, and oh, it's the sour kangaroo, and there's the cat, and there's the Whos. You know, so as long as you can believe that we're seeing a play and allowing yourself to not be too attached to some things that might be slightly different or some things that might not have made it in. You know, Dr. Seuss had a really, really, really long list of books he wrote, so not everything did make it into the Broadway version.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Not everything made it into our 90-minute version, but I do think we've preserved the integrity of his work, so it should be really fun for people who know Dr. Seuss and love him to those who know the name, and that's about it.
Yeah. Well, what about the costuming? I would think costuming would be very important for this, especially the colors. The book often had the same colors.
Yes. I actually was the costume designer for the show because I had a very specific vision. A lot of the costume is highly suggestive, particularly in the Jungle of Newell scenes, because we're an outdoor theater in August. Putting on an actual kangaroo suit, not the healthiest, safest decision for actors to do. And not to mention, because I'm going to repeat something I said earlier in this discussion about, oh, the things you can think. So I want the audience to have to think about what these characters are. So, for instance, our kangaroo. While she does wear kangaroo ears, she's also wearing a fanny pack. And the fanny pack is jungly, it's hikery, but that's her pouch. So there are moments where you have to kind of think about what that costume means in the context of that character. Very, very bright colors. In Whoville, I've designed it to wear each family unit has a color. The Broadway stage picture had a lot of yellow, which really, really worked. It was beautiful. But 74 people all in yellow, that's a lot of yellow. So breaking it down, but everything is very, very bright hues, very bright tones, and they've provided their own costumes, and they've taken all of my suggestions so beautifully. So it should be very fun and playful.
Yeah, now, Val, is this the largest cast you've ever been in, perhaps? 74 is a lot.
It's really, really close. I was in a production of Bye Bye Birdie at Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park that Jay Combs directed in 06. It had, like, I don't know, 106 or something.
Oh, you know all those characters then. You know,
yeah,
Jay?
I do. Oh, yeah. I've been around. They you know, what I really am enjoying about Seussical is the diversity in the music. So they bring in, composers brought in every style of music from ballads to rock and roll, Beach Boy to Latin to pop. And it's fun music to sing, and it's challenging music to sing. And one of the things I'm proudest of about this production is we have a 4-week rehearsal period. Now, usually they do 6 to 8 weeks
yes,
in community theater.
That
so it didn't sound like much. I thought, oh, 4 weeks, no problem. Wow. You really have to work very hard to get everything looking polished, and this cast is really pulled together as a community and worked really hard both on the set and in rehearsal and making all their own costumes. I'm really impressed with the community sense in Gladstone and proud to be a part of it.
Well, the show opens this Friday, August the 7th, 8:30 p.m. It ought to be fairly dark by then, or close to dark.
Yeah, first 45 minutes takes a little while, and then it's nice and dark. And that's good news, because we have a black light number in Act 2.
Yeah, let's talk.
But you don't need it for long, because the show's only 90 minutes, and it's free.
That's true.
Well, it's in Oak Grove Park, and let's talk about some of the set. Now, when does the blanket... Well, I read on the website, chairs and blanket... After 3 o'clock. So is that when you can line up to make?
Yes. That's a long-standing Gladstone tradition.
Yes, this I want to hear.
If you want
the blanket rain.
If you want prime real estate seating, get up to 76th and North Troost and come on down to the park. Have that tarp or blanket and chairs in your hand. You line up. And then they'll count you down on the go. You just run and stake out some territory. Blankets only in the front, and there are signs marked where we can switch over to chairs. Stake out your property. Gladstone's a really friendly community, so you can leave your things. There are people from the city who kind of patrol the area to make sure things don't go missing. Go enjoy your day. Come back in time for 8:30 start.
So you don't have to stay at 3 o'clock. You can just leave your blanket, and
that's true.
Then you can come back later on.
Yeah, and it's a huge park. So even if you're like, oh, I got stuff going on, can't be there at 3, you show up at 7:45, 8. There will be space.
Uh-huh. Now, the theater is located, as you mentioned, at the intersection, this is the way I wrote it down, North Troost Avenue and Northeast 76th Street. And as I recall, it wasn't far from Oak Park. No offense, there's that.
You're
big rival. But it was real close to Oak Park High School.
Right next to it.
Yeah. So the best place to get off of North Oak would be what street?
72nd.
72nd. 72nd is the main.
And that'll take you over to the east, only slightly.
To
North Troost, and get you to Oak Grove Park.
Mm-hmm.
I have a website here. It's rather complicated, so I might repeat it a couple of times. heartoftheweb.net/GladstoneTIP. Is that or is there a shorter one than what I found?
I think you can enter into your web browser without the heart of whatever you said.
Yeah.
I think you can just do www.gladstonetip.com.
Okay, much simpler then for any information. But, you know, as we've explained, there's no real reserving spaces. You have to get there, and you have to stake out your ground. But people that can't come until later, that's probably still room. You said it was a big park.
Absolutely, and good seats, too. It's a huge stage, so.
Oh, yeah.
Not a bad seat in the house.
More difficult doing an outdoor musical than an indoor stage play?
I think every show has its own set of challenges. I think outdoors, you're just trying to keep your cast healthy, not have them get overheated, stay hydrated, don't swallow bugs, stay out of the sun, like these sort of things. But, you know, I find it very rewarding, you know, because then you literally have a lot of sweat and tears. You know, it takes a whole new meaning.
Well, when you were considered for the directorship, I guess there was two shows Gladstone had to offer. Is this the one you wanted to do?
Actually, it was the only show I was able to do because of a vacation. But I've, like Zach, done GTIP for a long time. I got my start in 1996 in Meet Me in St. Louis. And this is my second year directing. So I said, look, I can only do the second show, so I guess that's Seussical. So here's my application. I'm really excited. But this show has just exceeded every expectation I ever had of what Seussical could be. And I've really fallen in love with this show and what it has to say.
Sure. The estate found a new manuscript of Theodore Geisel's, or also known as Dr. Seuss, and I guess that's going to be made into a book soon.
And yes, and What Pet Will We Get?
Yes.
I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. It might be What Pet Shall We Get? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But that book was just released as well. We had a promo.
Some have said, if you don't know, that's fine, because I'm not sure. But they said that was may have been written before the actual first book was written. So that might be the first book.
Time for a revival.
They might add to your story or make it even longer.
Oh, yeah.
But it's only 90 minutes.
It's only 90.
That's free. Not bad at all. And it begins this this Friday, August the 5th, 8:30 p.m. That's when the show starts.
August 5th.
Saturday the 8th. Yeah, Friday the 7th. Saturday the 8th, 8:30 p.m. Sunday the 9th, 8:30 p.m. No afternoon matinees for these musicals.
Nope.
At the Oak Grove Park. The avenue, the intersection of North Troost Avenue and Northeast 76th Street in Gladstone, and I guess Gladstone Theater in the Park .tip.
GladstoneTIP.com.
Okay, very good.
That's Hashtag Google it.
Probably should Google it in any case. Well, I want to thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
And talking about your show, Vanessa Campagna.
That's correct. You got it.
PhD, the director of the shows, and with us as well. It's all on different pieces of paper, so forgive me. Zach Faust, who plays the Cat in the Hat, and Val Phillips, who plays Mrs. Mayor.
Yes, that's right.
Say hello to your friends for me.
I will.
I saw Missy within the last year. I haven't seen Ron for a while. Ron McGill was very entertaining, the late night theater. What kinds of things did you do there? We only have
I was in the all-female cast of Bonanza.
Oh, with Stasha.
Yes.
With Sasha Case. Yes.
Sasha Case,
that was very well done. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's right. The Jazz Insider is next. You're going to hear great jazz this afternoon, and then that jazz from 1 to 3. Then you're going to hear some great blues. Blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Ho. We'll see you.